AI agents are everywhere, automating tasks and making decisions at machine speed. But agents make mistakes. Just one rogue agent can do big damage before you even notice. Rubrik Agent Cloud is the only platform that helps you monitor agents, set guardrails, and rewind mistakes, so you can unleash agents, not risk. Accelerate your AI transformation at rubrik.com. That's rubrik.com.
Find other great podcasts like this one at podmoth.network.
Welcome to Primetime Crime Podcast. I am your host, Kylie, and in this podcast, we are going to deep dive into some lesser-known unsolved true crime cases, from missing persons to unsolved homicides. This is the place where we are going to unpack it all, research it all, talk about it all, and try to bring justice to these families after all of these years. We are going to take it one story at a time, one case at a time, and hopefully justice will be ours.
Located on the edges of your radio static, you've stumbled upon the Lost Signal, your podcast destination for tales of horror and the macabre, brought to life with voice acting and sound effects. New episodes are released every 2 weeks on Monday on Spotify, iTunes, or wherever else you get your podcasts. Join us, won't you?
Welcome to the Brutal, Bizarre, and Boozy podcast. I'm Declan, the son.
And I'm Jane, the mom. This is the podcast where we talk about brutal crimes, bizarre occurrences, and get you drunk with cocktails themed around one of our stories. To lighten things up, we'd like to end our time with a chaser. Please keep in mind some of our stories might be upsetting to young or sensitive ears.
We love hearing from our listeners, so feel free to contact us by email or social media. You can find our contact info in the show notes for this episode. If you'd like to support us through Patreon, you can find us there at Brutal, Bizarre, and Boozy Podcast, or use the link in our show notes.
Welcome back, everybody. Thank you for joining us again for some brutal, bizarre, and boozy drinks. How are you doing today, Declan?
I'm doing good. How are you?
I'm doing well, thank you. What story do you have for us today?
Today, I'm going to be talking about Jack the Ripper.
Ooh. I look kind of forward classic, to hearing about that.
I didn't know too much about this before I started researching it. Everyone has heard of, he's like the first well-known serial killer kind of people hear about.
Right.
But I didn't know really too much about it.
Spooky stuff, because it also was so long ago.
One of the audio dramas I'm listening to is like a time travel thing, and they end up at the time of the Jack Ripper killings, and they're trying to stop it, but not like mess up the timeline. It's interesting.
Right, yeah.
What are you gonna
I'm not a huge fan
today?
Of time traveling stuff because
I mean,
it always breaks my brain.
I haven't finished the podcast yet because it's one thing when you're watching a movie about time travel and you can see like there's a carriage instead of a Mercedes driving on the road. But this is just audio drama. So it's like, it's only audio. You just have to be paying super close attention. And so I kind of stopped listening to it at work, which is mostly where I listen to podcasts. Because it's like, I'm doing stuff and I'm like, okay, are we in the future? Are we in the past? What's happening right now? Like,
yeah, I would have a hard time with that.
What are you going to be telling us about today, Mom?
I am going to be telling you a story about cyberbullying, a specific case.
Is this the mom bullying the kid?
Yes.
Oh, God. I've heard this story. Yes. I just don't know the intricate details of it.
Right. And it turns out that we know someone who is good friends with someone who worked on the film, like producer-ish, I believe is what she said.
Oh, it's a movie? Cat.
It's a documentary. Yeah, there's a documentary about it called Unknown Number.
Did that come out recently?
Yes.
I might have seen that on Netflix. Okay.
Yes, I saw it on there and I had seen something about it on just like a generic post on social media, but I didn't know anything about it. And then saw a comment that was like, I can't believe a mom would do this. And then I went, oh, well, now you have me intrigued. I wasn't necessarily going to watch it, but I didn't know it was whose mom, but could figure out that based on that clue, it was a mom, but didn't realize. So we'll get into that. I don't want to spoil it for anyone who doesn't know the story, but to go along with the story, I have the drink called Delete That Text. I thought it was a perfectly
named. That's a very
apt
name, yeah.
Yes, yes. And the ingredients are 4 fresh blackberries, 1 ounce of vodka, 1 ounce of gin, 1/2 ounce of elderflower liqueur, 3/4 ounce of lemon juice. You can have a garnish of a lemon peel and a rosemary sprig if you so desire. The steps are to place the berries in a shaker and muddle. Add the vodka, gin, elderflower liqueur, and lemon juice with ice to your shaker. Shake well until chilled. And double strain into a rocks glass over fresh ice and then garnish if you are so garnishing. Are you ready
I'm excited for this. Yeah, let's give it a try.
I am excited for this too because I love anything blackberry. So
true Oregonian.
It could be very yummy. Okay.
You could skip the gin. You could replace the gin with like Sprite, I think, and it'd be a lot better.
It needs some sweetness to it. It needs a little bit of simple syrup. I think the elderflower and the gin combo make it very dry and kind of bitter.
I know you don't like bubbly, but I think Sprite would be a perfect addition to this. Just like put it in a tall glass and top it up with
Sprite. If you did Sprite, then you could skip the simple, but there needs to be a sweetness to this because it's just kind of bitter and dry.
Yeah, it's weird. I like it. It's not bad.
It's not terrible, but it's also not great. So we'll just have to do an almost swing and a miss with that one, but not quite. Okay, let's get into our cyberbullying story. Michigan.
Before we get into that, we should throw up a poll on our Instagram and put some of the rankings that you sent me and see which one.
Oh yes,
our fans
I was gonna bring that up as my chaser.
Okay, yeah, we'll talk more.
I sent them to you. Yeah. Yes, we'll talk about it at the end of the show because I do want to give some options and then also give a shout out to the person who suggested this idea.
Okay.
So. Beale City, Michigan is a small community with about 300 people. It is so small that the only school goes from kindergarten to 12th grade and is all in one building. Tiny.
Jesus.
This is the type of place where everyone knows each other. And of course, just because it's a tiny community, that doesn't mean that everyone likes each other. But in general, people are fairly decent to each other as a whole. In October 2020, things started to take a nasty turn for two teens. Lauren Licari and Owen McKenney were often called the quote-unquote golden couple in their group of friends. The couple was in the seventh grade and 13 years old. Not that I have a problem with 13-year-olds dating in the seventh grade or anything like that, but to call them the golden couple just seems a bit
seems like you're putting a lot of pressure on these kids.
Yes, like, it's a lot.
I don't think I've ever heard of a seventh grade relationship lasting past
exactly
middle school.
It's very rare, I think. But our society kind of trains us to think that it's going to happen when it never does. I mean, what, maybe 0.001%?
They call them high school sweethearts, not middle school sweethearts. Like,
right. And even high school relationships don't typically last past high school or a couple of years after.
You said it was a small town, right? I think it's more common in smaller towns where there's your options are limited if you don't leave.
That's a valid point.
There's only 50 women you can date.
You have a very like shallow dating pool and a small pond. Okay, good point, good point.
There's plenty of fish in the sea, but there's only a couple in this pond.
Right, exactly. There's two fish in this pond. So, you know, you get what you get. The couple were friends before they started dating. They did a lot of activities together, and so did their families. Lauren's mom, Kendra, and Owen's mom, Jill, were good friends as well. In October 2020, one of the local families was planning their annual Halloween party. The Licari and McKenney families were planning to go to the party all together, but Owen and Lauren started getting strange text messages before it. The texter seemed intent on getting the couple to break up, first texting that Owen planned to break up with Lauren and that he no longer liked her. The messages went on to say that Lauren shouldn't go to the party. Neither Lauren or Owen recognized the number, and initially they just tried ignoring it. You know, if you don't like what somebody's saying, then just ignore it and hopefully it'll go away. That did not work in this instant. As the messages persisted for weeks, the teens tried to learn who was sending the messages, but they couldn't seem to figure it out. Some of the messages had nicknames or details included that led them to believe it was probably someone that they knew, but none of their friends recognized the number either. Basically, they're seeing this number and they're asking everyone, hey, do you recognize this number? Do you have it in your contacts? They're sending us all these weird messages and we want it to stop, but we don't know who it is. And nobody recognizes the number. The hurtful messages went on for a few weeks, then seemed to stop just as quickly as they started. Lauren and Owen must have felt some level of relief at this point when the messages stopped, until they suddenly started back up again a few months later in September of 2021. But this time, it was worse. It got really bad. The messages were getting increasingly hurtful and personal and even sexual in nature. It was... I watched sexual the documentary. Well, it was saying like things threatening to like Lauren. It was like, Owen likes this done. He likes to do this to me. Oh. He won't do that to you. And it was like, it was sexual stuff. That again, okay. They're like 14 years old now.
Knowing the ending of this story is just,
yes,
it's hard to listen to the details.
Yes, and that's why I'm not reading the details, because it's really gross. Many of the texts were targeted to Lauren's insecurities, and several of the messages mentioned that she should take her own life. Which, as you just said, knowing the end of the story makes it even worse. Yeah. The frequency of the messages was increasing. Often they were getting 40 to 50 messages a day.
At Emory University, we believe in those with the ambition to achieve, the passion to learn, and the optimism to see the possibilities ahead. Founded on a belief that the wise heart seeks knowledge, an Emory education combines experiential learning in Atlanta and beyond with unrivaled collaboration and discovery, all to prepare you for a world that needs your leadership. Learn more at emory.edu.
At all hours of the day and even during class. It was impossible for them to block the messages because they were coming in from different numbers. Even if they blocked it, it was a new number the next time. So then you can't block every number that comes into your phone. Mm-hmm. They're just hoping, yeah, you know.
That's what I would do. I just keep blocking it.
Right. Lauren and Owen and their friends started watching everyone around them in school, trying to see if anyone was texting at the time that the messages were received. Eventually, the teens told their parents about the texts. Both sets of parents took the issue to the school since many of the messages were coming during class hours. The school started watching students closely and reviewing video footage to see if they could match anyone's phone activities to the times the messages were received. But they had no luck as well. The stress of the situation led Lauren
to figure out who Superman is. It's like Clark Kent's never in the room, but we're still getting text messages.
Right. Yeah. Lauren and Owen ended up breaking up basically because they were getting all these messages and it really played havoc with their lives. A few messages alluded to the involvement of another student in Beale City, one that Lauren didn't get along with, but she was quickly ruled out since there was no evidence it was her. It was also suggested that maybe Lauren was sending them to herself because she was trying to get attention, but that was ruled out as well. Local law enforcement was also brought into the investigation, and they tried to find the sender, but also ran into a brick wall. They're not able to figure it out because the number keeps changing. They're like, well, it doesn't, this number doesn't belong to anyone that anybody knows. So I don't know. The Licari and McKinney parents were getting very frustrated since there was no resolution, often asking both the school and law enforcement if they had any leads. Just checking in, you know, like going to the school and saying, hey, have you guys figured it out? Do you have any ideas who might be involved? Going to the cops, any new leads that you could tell us? Should we stay away from this person or that person? And everybody's like, we have no idea. We're clueless. With no progress in the case, the local sheriff notified the FBI, who brought in a cyber crimes expert from another local agency. They evaluated hundreds of pages of terrible messages and finally found a link to an IP address. The IP address linked back to someone deeply involved in the situation. As we kind of alluded to earlier, it was Lauren's mom, Kendra.
What a
when fucking confronted by police.
Can't say that word.
Right?
But
yes.
We all know what
I'm
thinking of.
The, see you next Tuesday word?
Yeah, we'll see you next Tuesday.
Mm-hmm. That's right. Kendra initially denied any involvement, but she quickly relented and claimed that she was not the original sender. Kendra stated that she didn't know who the original sender was. She insisted that she was the one who started the messages back up again in September, saying that she was hoping Lauren or Owen would ask, is this so-and-so? She says that she just started it back up. Well, she tried that because there were several messages that were alluding to another girl in the community that was not friends with Lauren, sending like little, some of the texts were saying, oh, I scored this many points in the game last night. And so Lauren sat down with her mom, who was a record keeper at the games, to figure out who scored that many points. And it was only this one girl. And then started putting pictures of this girl in some of the texts. And So, of course, law enforcement goes to this girl and is like, hey, are you involved? And she's like, I have nothing to do with this. I don't know what you're talking about. And then other people are like, well, why would she, if she was the sender, why would she put her own picture in there and point the finger at herself? That would just be dumb. So, yeah, the mom did try and pin it on other people and temporarily.
If there's cyberbullying, then there's probably going to be bullying in person as well. So if that kid has never bullied them and had a negative interaction, it sounds like they're on the same team. So like
they were, but they did not get along. They were not friends.
Okay.
Yeah, they weren't friends, and this other girl was an easy target, but there was nothing linking it to her. And the mom is saying, well, I started sending them in September of 2021, but I didn't start it to begin with. I just picked up where the ball got dropped by this other unknown person.
I don't know if you said or not, but is dad in the picture for this?
Yes. Yep.
Okay.
Dad was involved in the whole thing, and we're going to talk about dad here in a minute. But he knew everything. Mom and dad are... At that time, they were married, they were together, they all lived together. And he was just as puzzled by the whole thing as the rest of the freaking town, not knowing it was his wife.
Oh, I thought you said he was involved. Oh, okay. But he was involved in the family, you mean?
He was involved in the family. Okay. He wasn't. Yes.
Okay, I see now. Okay, I thought you meant, I thought you were saying he was involved in this. I was like, what?
Not in the cyberbullying, no. He was just involved in his daughter's life.
His parental life, yeah. Okay.
Exactly. Kendra said that even though she started it in September of 2021, it was only intended to try and flesh out a name, but then it just kind of got out of hand. After that, I would say 40 to 50 messages a day is out of hand. Yes. And the shit that she was writing in them, out of hand is an understatement, to say the least.
If I got 40 to 50 messages a day, I would lose my mind. I would.
Right. I would shut my phone off.
Yeah.
Right. Exactly. Law enforcement notified Lauren and her dad, Sean, about Kendra's involvement. Sean was absolutely shocked to learn that Kendra, his wife, could have ever done something so hurtful to their daughter. Mind you, their daughter. He also quickly learned that Kendra had been lying about other things in their life, including the jobs, which she said she had, but she didn't. For months, she had claimed that she had quit her job at a local university and was working at another job. But neither of those things were true. She had actually been fired from the university, and the other job was apparently just make-believe. In the documentary, they don't really say if she had that other job, but they don't say she didn't have that job. And the dad, her husband, asks her about it, and she just kind of shakes her head. So it doesn't look like she had the second job she claimed to have. Instead of working all day, she was cyberbullying her daughter and stalking her daughter's ex-boyfriend. You know, priorities. You got things to do. How do you send 50 messages a day and still have a job?
Maybe she works at T-Mobile.
You can't.
Right. I'm just testing the products. That's why she'd have access to all the numbers, all the display phones. She's just going around to each display
good
phone
point.
Texting her daughter.
Well, funny that you should mention the numbers. She used an app that cycled through fake numbers to hide her personal number. And that's why investigators had such a hard time tracking it. She was using this randomized phone number app. Kendra was arrested and charged with 2 counts of stalking a minor and 2 counts of communicating with another to commit a crime. She pleaded guilty to the stalking charges and was sentenced to 19 months to 5 years in prison.
So
she basically only served 19 months.
I think the judge should allow her daughter to just beat the shit out of her before she goes in. Like, because people like that have just never been hit before for their actions, I feel. So,
right.
I feel like that would do more teaching than being in jail. If you're the victim, gets to beat the shit out of you.
Maybe. Well, I'm going to finish the story and then you can tell me what you think about the relationship. She basically just served her 19 months and then was released on parole. She will remain on post-release supervision until 2026. Of course, there are a million questions about why Kendra would do this to her own daughter. Kendra believes she was trying to deal with her own childhood trauma and it led her to take these actions. I can't understand or fathom how she can justify that in her own mind, but that's what she claims, that she was abused and had some traumatic things. And I'm not denying that that happened, but I don't see how you go to the extreme of sending
your own daughter
thousands of texts to your daughter and bullying your daughter that way.
Bully your daughter's like friends or something. Bully your daughter.
It's wild. Owen's mom, Jill, believes Kendra was basically just obsessed with Owen and recalled that Kendra went to all of his sporting events even after Owen and Lauren broke up. So she's just not just
obsessed with a 14-year-old boy.
Wasn't technically, gross. Super, super duper gross. Some believe this was a cyber version of Munchausen by proxy and that Kendra was just getting off on the attention that the entire situation and investigation caused. That's been one of the suggestions, which totally, when you think about it in that context, it makes sense that it could be considered that. I've never heard of a case like that, but you know. Others think that this was Kendra's effort to stay connected to her teenage daughter because, you know, teens grow away from their parents as they should, as they grow up. And the bullying forced Lauren into this terrible situation. And so she went to her mom for support. And so Kendra could get off on, well, my daughter's not growing apart from me because I'm bullying her into staying connected to me. Just cuckoo for Cocoa Puffs.
What kind of fucking backwards thinking is that? That makes no sense.
Oh, for sure.
It's like a farmer having all his cattle killed by the butcher because he wants the butcher to buy meat or something. Like,
right. It's ridiculous. That, yeah. Kendra's husband, Sean, filed for divorce and was awarded sole custody of Lauren. Although Kendra and Lauren are not allowed to physically see each other, they still communicate by phone or email. And Lauren says she loves her mom and looks forward to when they can see each other.
That should be in the, when pedophiles get arrested, they they're not supposed to be on the internet. That you shouldn't be able to contact your daughter through the phone. If you were cyberbullying her through the phone for years.
Right.
That
snail mail. That's it. That's what you get. I'm going to give you a piece
you
of paper
email
and a
me.
Pen.
That's
the
it.
End.
No text message.
Nothing. But the fact that,
God.
Lauren says she loves her mom. I get that. I mean, you love your parent, but I can't understand wanting to stay in communication with that person and be like, I love you, but I don't like you and I never have to talk to you again, period. I have cut you out of my life. This is an excellent example of cutting out a parent from your life.
Yeah, I wouldn't talk to you anymore if you did that to me. I would do everything to get you admitted to like a state-run hospital or something.
Right.
This person does not need to be out on the street.
Texted her daughter multiple times saying that she should take her own life. Yeah. And then when asked about that, she's like, well, I knew she wouldn't actually do it. No, you don't know. People, you don't know what another person is capable of unless you're that person. So don't ever say something like that to anyone ever.
Yeah.
It's just crazy. It's gross. Just super gross.
This isn't going to be happier, but let's talk about something different. Jack the Ripper.
Jack the Ripper.
So in London, 1888. There's a time when industrial progress clashed with human suffering, where the upper class lived in decadence while the poor huddled in overcrowded slums. In one small district known as Whitechapel, a shadow was about to fall. This shadow belonged to the killer of the world that would come to known as Jack the Ripper. Tonight, we're going back to the streets of Victorian London to examine one of the most infamous unsolved murder sprees in history. We'll look at the women who were killed, the investigation that failed to catch the killer, and the theories that have kept people obsessed for over 130 years.
It's wild that it's that long.
Yeah. And there's theories out there that I'll talk about, but to understand this story, we need to start with the setting. Whitechapel, in the East End of London, was a neighborhood unlike any other. It was overcrowded, dirty, and dangerous. Home to thousands of working-class families, immigrants, and people struggling to survive. Prostitution, alcoholism, and homelessness were rampant. Many women turned to sex work simply to afford a bed for the night. The streets were narrow and poorly lit. Crime was common, and police patrols were stretched thin. It was a place where the line between survival and despair was paper thin. In this world, the women who would become the Ripper's victims lived on the margins, often anonymous in life and even more so in death. There are some other murders that were kind of linked to him, but I'll talk about that in a little bit.
Okay.
So the first possible Ripper victim was Emma Elizabeth Smith. And kind of the reason that there's a lot of murders that happened around that time that could be attributed to him, that are attributed to him, that are suspected to be, like, because there's not the type of evidence that we have now. They didn't have DNA, they didn't have fingerprints, right, stuff like that. So it's believed that there's a lot of, like, copycat killers.
Well, I mean, why wouldn't there be?
Yeah. So the first possible Ripper victim was Emma Elizabeth Smith, attacked on April of 1888. She survived long enough to tell police she'd been assaulted by two or three men and robbed. She died from her injuries the next day. Her death didn't match the later murders, but some believe it was the work of the same man before his methods evolved.
Okay.
So then came Martha Tabram, something like that. Martha was found dead on August 7th, 1888. She'd been stabbed 39 times. But unlike other victims, she wasn't mutilated in the same surgical fashion. Still, her death was brutal and set a stage for what would soon follow. Just a few weeks later, the killings that define this legend began. Mary Ann Nichols, also known as Polly. In the early hours of August 31st, 1888, a man named Charles Cross was walking to work through Bucks Row, a quiet street in Whitechapel. Around 3:40 a.m., he saw something on the ground what looked like a tarp or a bundle of rags. When he got closer, he realized it was the body of a woman.
Ooh.
Her throat had been slit twice and her abdomen had been mutilated. The woman was soon identified as Mary Ann Nichols. She was 43 years old, separated from her husband and living in lodging houses, often sleeping on the streets when she couldn't afford the fee. A doctor estimated she had been killed less than 30 minutes before she was found.
Wow.
Which is terrifying.
Yeah, it is.
Whoever did it had done it quickly and vanished into the night. Pauline Nichols was the first of what would be known as the Canonical Five victims. Annie Chapman, who was killed just over a week later on September 8th, around 6 a.m., a woman's body was discovered in the backyard of 29 Hanbury Street. Her name was Annie Chapman, 47 years old. Her throat had been cut deeply and her abdomen was open, similar to the last victim. And if you're sensitive, I would recommend just skipping to the chaser at this point. What I'm about to say is not good at all.
Okay. I should put in a warning on the description of this.
Just right here. We've been chatting for long enough, so if you're just listening, just skip ahead a little bit. But her intestines were placed over her shoulder, and her uterus had been removed with what appeared to be precision. Mm. Yeah.
Okay.
See, just skip forward.
Yeah.
A witness claimed to have seen Annie talking to a man that morning, described as dark-haired, wearing deer stalker hat and a dark coat, but the man was never identified. This killing suggested the murderer had medical knowledge because he surgically removed the uterus, which is...
Ooh.
Police began to suspect they were dealing with someone who understood anatomy. The next murder happened on the same night, September 30th. What became known as the double event. The first victim, Elizabeth Stride, a 44-year-old Swedish woman known to friends as Long Liz. Her body was found at about 1 a.m. in Dutfield's yard. British names are goofy, but her throat had been cut, but she wasn't mutilated like the others. So some kind of think this might have been a copycat.
Oh.
Or that the killer had been scared off before he could finish.
Yeah.
His.
That's what I was wondering. Like.
Yeah, it's kind of up in the air for that one.
Something spooked him.
Less than an hour later, another body was found less than a mile away. This time, the killer had plenty of time. Catherine Eddowes, a 46-year-old, was found in Meter Square. Her throat was cut, her face was slashed, and her abdomen was open. Her kidney and part of her uterus were missing. So it kind of makes you think, what's he doing with the pieces that he's taking?
I don't, Jeffrey Dahmering it, probably.
Near the scene, police found a piece of Edo's apron, bloodstained and discarded in a doorway on Galston Street. Above it, written in chalk, was a message. The Jews are the men that will not be blamed for nothing. And that's not Jewish. It's J-U-W-E-S. The Jews are the men that will not be blamed for nothing. The writing was controversial. The police commissioner, Charles Warren, ordered it erased before it could be photographed, fearing it would incite anti-Semitic violence, which...
Yeah, understandable. Yeah.
Even though he spelled it wrong, I'm sure that's might be the meaning behind
that
it.
That was
but
likely the intent was to...
Maybe it was like...
Involve
English,
that
they have different words. Maybe group. It was like some... dialect at the time
maybe.
That they use. I don't know.
Maybe. I don't or know, he just can't spell for shit because, you know, the level of education of people sometimes, even today, you know.
The final and most horrific murder came on November 9th, 1888. Mary Jane Kelly was 25 years old, much younger than the other victims, and lived in a small room at 13 Miller's Court. And I'm pretty sure this is the person that podcast I was talking about earlier was based on.
Oh, okay.
Because I think They said her name was Mary, but I can't.
Could be.
Anyways, so that morning, her landlord assistant went to collect rent. When she looked through the window, she saw a nightmare. Mary Jane Kelly's body was mutilated beyond recognition. Her throat had been slashed to the spine and her body disemboweled. Her heart was missing and parts of her organs were arranged around the bed.
Gross.
Yeah, this is
gross.
Unlike the earlier murders, this one happened indoors, meaning the killer had privacy and time. The murder of Mary Jane Kelly is widely considered the last of the Ripper's confirmed victims. After that, the killing stopped as suddenly as they began.
Wow.
The police investigation was massive but chaotic. Two separate forces were involved: the Metropolitan Police, led by Commissioner Charles Warren, and the City of London Police, which had jurisdiction over the Mitre Square. Detectives interviewed hundreds of people, distributed thousands of leaflets, and offered rewards for information. But it was 1888. Before fingerprinting, before forensics, before organized databases, there was not a very easy way to find them. You just kind of got to catch them.
Right. Yeah, exactly.
Witnesses described varied versions of the killer, often foreign-looking and well-dressed. There's a lot of theories that flew around.
Right.
Most of them were hoaxes, but three became infamous. There was the Dear Boss letter received by the Central News Agency on September 27th, 1888. It mocked the police and signed off with the name Jack the Ripper, the first known use of that name.
Oh,
so someone had written a letter to the news agencies. Two days later, the Saucy Jackie postcard arrived referencing the double event before it was publicly known through timelines that are murky. So the news also received a card detailing this double event where there was two women killed in the same night before any papers had released the information.
Oh, okay. That's interesting.
Then came another letter titled From Hell, which was sent to George Lusk, head of a Whitechapel vigilance committee. It arrived with half a human kidney preserved in alcohol.
Oh!
The handwriting was crude and the letter read, "From hell, Mr. Lusk. Sir, I send you half the kidney I took from one woman. Preserved it for you. Together piece I fried and ate it."
Gross. Okay, so I was right.
It was very nice. Catch me when you can, Mr. Lusk.
Gross.
That's what the letter said.
Gross.
The kidney was analyzed, but tests at the time couldn't confirm if it really came from Catherine Eddowes. The letter would just continue to add to the hysteria. But whether any general remains could have been like a pig kidney or... They couldn't confirm. Yeah. It was just... You kind of just had to take the letter for
its word. They're not DNA testing then. Wow.
Over the years, more than 100 suspects have been proposed, from barbers to artists to doctors to members of royalty, but a few stand out. The first one I'll talk about is Aaron Kosminski. Kosminski was a Polish-Jewish barber who lived in Whitechapel. He suffered from mental illness and was institutionalized in 1891. A surviving police memo from the time named Kosminski as a suspect, noting he had a great hatred of women and strong homicidal tendencies.
Okay.
In 2014, modern researchers claimed that DNA evidence from a shawl found from one of the crime scenes matched the descendants of both Catherine Eddowes and Kosminski's family line. However, the DNA work has been widely criticized for contamination and poor methodology. So while he's a strong suspect, there's no conclusive proof that he was the killer.
Gotcha.
The next suspect, is Montague John Druitt. Druitt was a 31-year-old barista and school teacher. He disappeared shortly after Mary Jane Kelly's murder, and his body was later found in the River Thames, an apparent suicide. Some investigators at the time believed his death marked the end of the killings. Police notes even described him as sexually insane. I don't know what the fuck what? That means, but...
That's what I want to know. Like, what exactly...
A different way of describing things back then, I guess.
I don't know what that guess. Even... Sexually insane. Oh.
However, there's okay. no direct evidence linking Druitt to the murders, only circumstantial timing. So another suspect is Dr. Thomas Neil Cream. Cream was a doctor and a serial killer, later executed in 1982 for poisoning prostitutes. According to a legend.
Wait a second. When did you say he was?
1982. So 4 years after the murders.
That would have. Oh, 1892.
Did I say 1982?
Yes, you did. You did. And I was like, well, that would make him over 100 years old.
I think I'm dyslexic
old.
When it comes to numbers. I can read.
I think okay, you but the are number, too.
I get
you got
fucked
it from
up
your
with
dad.
Numbers every time. Yes, 1892, yeah. 4 years after the murders, he was arrested for poisoning
okay, that
a prostitute.
Makes sense.
According to legend, as he was hung, his last words were, "I am Jack the before the trapdoor fell." But that story doesn't hold up. Cream was in prison in Illinois during the Ripper murders. Still, his background as a medical killer kept his name in circulation. But
wow, okay.
It was just folklore, I think. There's not a lot to corroborate that information.
Probably.
But, so one of the other suspects is kind of controversial, but some people think that Prince Albert Victor, grandson of Queen Victoria, was Jack the Ripper. The idea suggests he had contracted syphilis or was involved in a scandal with prostitutes and that the royal family covered it up. However, historical records Ooh. Show he wasn't even in London during several of the murders, so this is also widely dismissed.
Yeah.
Yeah. So
it's hard to track somebody's
there's a lot
whereabouts
of suspects.
Back then, though.
Yeah. So some other theories. People suggest that it could have included butchers because they have
okay.
a
right.
knowledge of how to take organs out and things like that, but there's yeah. never been anyone that's officially been named Jack the Ripper.
I saw an article recently that said, and maybe it was in reference to the shawl that you mentioned, because I saw something about DNA testing of an article of clothing. And it was a couple of years ago. And of course, it has one of those headlines like, Jack the Ripper case has been solved. And then I read it and I was like, that's not solved. You don't know yeah, shit. No. You just said it. Yeah.
The DNA content, like they weren't right. bagging things in the 18, like police, when no. they bag evidence, it's very sanitary. Like you can test and have
right.
little to no contamination, but they probably just threw that shit in a shed and was like, we'll get to it when we get to it. Like,
right.
Who, they could have thrown it on top of another a different murder victim's clothes or something and just
right
I don't know I don't think we'll ever know for sure I think I it's like the DB Cooper thing or like the Zodiac killer
right.
people say we found it and yeah. then you read the article and like you said it's like that doesn't conclude anything you just have evidence of something
right.
else that you can't name like
right
I don't know. A chaser for us.
Yeah. My chaser is what we're going to put together as a poll. And in reference to, we've talked about this several times about coming up with good names for categories of our drinks, being ones that are really good and ones that are absolute shit that we just can't take more than one sip of and go, yeah, I'm never drinking that again. And I was talking with it about with some friends last night about it. Kat and Gina, shout out to them. Specifically, shout out to Kat because she said, just use ChatGPT and have them give you the some names. And I was like, yeah, but I kind of think that's cheating. And she looked at me and she goes, it's not cheating. Just use ChatGPT.
Okay. To be fair, she's also a principal. So that's saying a lot.
Yes. Right. GPT. So her saying it's not cheating, chat using chat for this purpose was not cheating in her mind. I thought that was kind of funny. And yes,
we should change some of the names. I think we could.
I do too. Better.
But yeah,
I think we need to maybe take, because there were some good names. There were some that were a little too long, but we could maybe take like this one and that one from, it gave me four categories, actually six categories, from anywhere from brutal, bizarre, and boozy themed, classic humor style, true crime twist. And it gave me, I asked it to give me four options. So one option of this is really good, we'll drink it again, all the way down to,
and then drink, I would probe this drink, I would fly over.
Right. I think we can use all our different options to come up with maybe.
If you have any
two different groups.
If you have any suggestions for us, feel free to drop it in the comment. If you have like a ranking that would be funny,
right, and
cool that you guys would like, then
so
let
for
us know.
Example, for people who are confused as to what we're looking for, this is the classic humor style. Top shelf keeper is that we'll make it again and brag about it. Happy hour, maybe. Fine if you're already a drink or two in, which I totally agree with. Some of those drinks, I've been like, I'm only drinking this if I can't taste it because I'm so inebriated that I don't care anymore. Last call mistake is seemed like a good idea at the time, which is pretty funny. And then the last one in that group was crime against cocktails because it was guilty of terrible taste. Those were some
my
of
favorite
our options.
One
and
was the final cut one, the repeat offender, dangerously good if you'd happily do another round of it. Person of interest, intriguing and mostly enjoyable, but you're not sure if it's innocent. Suspicious
yes.
substance, not the worst crime, but something about it doesn't sit right. Or felony flavor, call the authorities. This one's total taste crime. That one was my favorite,
agree. I agree. That one was really, really good. So we're gonna talk about it amongst ourselves. And then if anybody sends us some ideas, we'll add those in and then we'll create a poll and see what people think we should do. And if there's any other suggestions,
we would
gladly appreciate it.
And if anyone knows how to make like a, if we could make not like an Excel sheet, but like rate our drinks so people could go and click and see like, oh, here's this. These are their top drinks. Oh. We should click on this one, connect it to the episode, and then you get the recipe too. And you can listen to the episode.
Yeah.
Find our favorite drinks.
That's cool. And the only problem with doing that is that I think you and I would have to go back in time and drink some of those.
We couldn't do it now, but
less
we could start
rememberable.
We could start some of them.
We could start from this episode going forward. And I mean, there's definitely been drinks that I remember the name. I remember I hated 100%.
The Godfather.
So that one,
we both
definitely
hated The Godfather.
The Godfather. Absolutely. It was trash. We could add some of those ones that we actually remember if they were good or not to the list. But
I think we
I am not going back to drink 165 drinks.
The Kentucky Derby, that was the mint julep when I talked about the
julep was great.
Yeah.
Huge fan of the julep now. It's one of my go-tos almost every weekend.
If you have any idea how to make like apps or something like that, send us a message. We can make a little
little
blog maybe or something like that. But
right, for sure. Anyway, what's your chaser?
My chaser is the movie Warfare, on HBO.
Oh, yeah. It was so good.
It's a new war movie. I don't know when it came out. It came out sometime this year, but I just saw it. It's got the eyebrow guy. And it's about
It's about warfare.
Navy SEALs that are locked down in kind of a sketchy environment. Yeah. And
yeah.
It's a good watch if you like war movies. There's not like, it's not like War Horse where you're going to be crying or anything. Like, it's
right.
There's some sad stuff that happens, but for the most part, most people live. So if you're worried about that, you don't have to, you can watch it safely. Most people live. Or right. Most good guys live, I should say.
Most people.
Most good guys live. They do some damage.
There are some casualties. There are some injured people. But yes, most people. Most
and
of the characters.
I really like that they showed some of the people from the actual like event that took place. They blurred. Yes. They showed real pictures, but blurred a lot of the characters that they were based on, like the real people. They showed the pictures, but blurred a lot of the faces. But I think that's cool. And it's like about a real story. And you can see some like photo evidence of like, I mean, you even if you can't see their face, you can see the environment that they're in and like you can kind of just connect the actor's face to the blurred picture.
Right.
But
yeah, it makes it, it definitely makes it more.
As a level of like connection.
Realistic.
That like kind of makes it
for
more
sure.
realistic. Yeah. But
yeah,
that's my chaser, my watch recommendation.
Nice. That's a good one.
Once again, for hanging out with us today. Listen to our episode, even though it was, I don't think either one of our stories were good. They're both pretty fucked up.
No. Yeah, they were.
Yeah. I didn't like having
at least mine solved.
I mean, the only thing about Jack the Ripper is if it took place any sooner, there'd be horrific pictures all over the place of it. But since
glad we don't have to see that.
I think back to the Issei Sagawa. What was his name? Something Sagawa.
Oh, yes.
When I was researching Sagawa, I accidentally came across the pictures and it was awful. So I'm glad I didn't have to see the pictures of whatever the fuck Jack the Ripper did. But
yeah. Just your verbal description was enough.
Yeah. Once again, thanks for listening, everybody. Check us out next week. Check out our old episodes. Yes. Send us a message on
Instagram
or in the comments if you have any suggestions for episodes you'd like to see too.
For sure.
Love you, Mom.
Love you, too. Bye. Bye.
Hey, friends. Thank you for supporting our podcast. Please share our show with your brutal and bizarre friends. Give us a boozy follow on your favorite podcast platform. If you're feeling extra generous, we'd appreciate a 5-star rating or review as well. But maybe do that sober so all the letters are in the right place.
You can find all our contact information in the show notes. We love hearing from you, and if you're interested in helping us stock the bar for our future boozy episodes, you can find our Patreon link in the show notes as well.